The Corolla Drinks Wine Club is back, offering you the best deals on 3, 6, and 12 packs of Mangria. Aside from discounts on each and every bottle, with a 3-pack, you'll get a custom actual chicken shit ticket signed by the Ace Man himself. With a 6-pack, you'll get the signed ticket, plus an exclusive shirt with every shipment only available to Wine Club members. We'll kick it off with the Ace Man's definitive taco rankings t-shirt designed by Corolla on paper. And with the 12-pack, you'll get the ticket, 3 custom shirts, plus a special invitation for you and a guest to the Corolla Family Summer Barbecue, held at our studio and hosted by Lynette and Adam. You'll eat incredible food, meet Adam, Brian, Gina, myself, and the lackeys, and get a tour of the ACS studio. Plus, you'll get to see each and every one of Ace's cars, including the magical 935. It all goes down June 22nd and is only for you beautiful 12-pack members. So head to CorollaDrinks.com and pick your tier today. This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Corolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. Welcome to Reasonable Doubt, the best 45 minutes to an hour in the universe.
That's the tell.
This episode brought to you by TrueCar.com and TommyJohn.com/M. Now, in all fairness, we are pre-taping this because I'm out of town. I'm in Boston.
I think I'm going to be right next door to you. You're going to be in Boston. You're at Connecticut and Boston. So Connecticut, you're doing the Friday night?
Yeah.
And then Boston, the Saturday night at the Wilbur, which is gorgeous by all accounts.
Yes.
So if I'm in Providence, I don't know that I'm going to be. What would you think's the better? The Foxwoods Casino is really attractive because you not only can gamble, imbibe, and then laugh.
Yes, right? that's what you shall do.
Right.
And then after the show, I'll say hi and take some pictures and all that good stuff.
Do you charge for the pictures?
No. I'm so
You're such
flattered.
A man of the people.
I literally had somebody last night out front of the ice house. I was in my car and the woman like banged on the window and like said, I want to take a picture. So I rolled the window down and then she handed this happens all the time. She handed her camera or her phone to a guy and he said, take a picture. And then the guy's like, I don't know your code on your, I can't unlock your phone. And there's a part of me that wants to scream, unlock the phone before you hand it to him.
Exactly. But you know, because
I'm a man of the people.
Exactly.
So everyone listening to this should know that we don't know what the outcome of the Super Bowl was or
right.
what the halftime show was about.
Or whether they did anything to honor Colin Kaepernick or not or to avoid the subject matter. But we could – this is a good test of our prognostication. The over-under on the Super Bowl, what do you think? What do you think happened? And as they're listening to this, we'll know instantly. So there's instant gratification.
Sadly, as a Rams fan, I say the Patriots win in heartbreaking fashion with a weird call and a long field goal, and my
really?
Rams lose because that's just with the Patriots. That's their MO.
That's their MO is they just kill you with heartbreak. This is very interesting because as a Rams fan, and we've talked about this, you really want to root for them, right? I mean – who is the ultimate heartbreak Ram coach? Ray Malavasi?
He was because he was coaching when they were – the reason that's a heartbreak in a sense is when the Rams went to the first Super Bowl and they were playing the Steelers, who were the Patriots of their day,
right?
Dominant dynasty, they were probably 9 or 10-point underdogs. It's a big dog for a Super Bowl. And they, going into the fourth quarter, were leading the game. You don't see big underdogs leading going to fourth quarter, ended up breaking everyone's heart and losing. The Rams, when they lost their second Super Bowl to the Patriots with Tom Brady a million years ago.
God, what year was that?
They were 14-point favorites in that. So that's a huge favorite. So you have to sort of pick your poison. What's bigger, heartbreaking, being a huge favorite and losing, or being a huge underdog and being ahead going into the fourth quarter and losing?
That's like the Harvard Business School conundrum. Are you a better investor if I give you $10 and you double your money and make $10, or if I give you $100 and you make $10?
Oh, interesting. And I've never heard that. I've never heard that one. So it's funny because Ray Malavasi is a guy who you've never heard of and you'll never hear from again if you're outside of Los Angeles. And he was literally one big Terry Bradshaw just sort of pass into the night with Stallworth going over his shoulder and two Rams defenders crossing in midair and barely getting a finger on the ball away from being a Super Bowl winning coach versus who?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Ray Malavasi. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's Los Angeles had its share of Italian coaches, Tommy Lasorda, Ray Malavasi. We were very Italian oriented at one point in LA.
Yeah.
There and are. Now that all the Italians who are succeeding with the, are kind of on the East Coast. It's a East Coast phenomenon now.
So
what's your prediction? Since we're going to know right now. It couldn't be any more horrible than to tape this prior to the game. You think they'll win? You think they'll lose in heartbreaking fashion? I think I'm going to go with youth and inexperience. I'm saying the Rams win. I said the Rams win.
Well,
this game.
I announced they did on my podcast, but I'll go 31-34 Patriots on this one and flip flop. I do like McVay. I do Rich Eisen from the NFL Network, who's just a great guy and very steeped in the knowledge of the game, told me a couple of years ago, he said, this guy, Sean McVay, he said, you know, your new coach, this guy's a crackerjack. And I said, I never heard of him, and I'll believe it when I see it. And I folded my arms. And he said, oh, no, this guy's a real deal.
A good friend of mine, she runs Big Three, is Amy Trask, who was with Al Davis for 30 years, started as an intern and ended up running the Raiders. She said the same thing. I mean, real deal. And it called it early. I mean, good eye for talent.
And for the first time, Belichick has the opportunity to be out Belichick by a younger version of him. Yeah. Whereas in the past, it's just, you know, the other guys were like sort of football coaches that we all grew up with, and Belichick was playing on a different level.
Right.
Now he's got to deal with that. So it's interesting.
So then I will tell you one of the interesting things about it too is the Patriots have become kind of, they've supplanted, you mentioned the Steelers, and then the Cowboys were also, you know, famously at some point America's team. Is it just winning that gets them there? Losing, you just kind of lose favor? Is there some other kind of element to that? I don't want to transform reasonable doubt into take a knee, but you're a fan of the professional sports. What's your interpretation?
I think you need to win, and then you need a charismatic quarterback. That's helpful. It's helpful to have like a charismatic, and the band needs to stay together for a period of time.
Right.
You know, and that's what the Steelers did. And, you know, the Cowboys had kind of like two dynasty periods.
Right.
You know?
There was the Troy Aikman era.
Yeah, they had Roger Staubach. They had like a half dynasty together. They created a whole dynasty. But, you know, when we grew up, we could name the entire infield for the Los Angeles Dodgers for year after year after year.
Exactly,
and,
right.
And now with free agency and parity and everything being shuffled around and all that, there is no more growing up with, Jaeger's behind the plate, Carlos at first place.
And you got
base
Ron Say at third, and you got Steve Sachs at second. You just don't have
that. Yeah. So I think the band needs to stay together for a while. Now, we'd be remiss if we didn't get into Kaepernick a little bit and predictions. again, you guys have all seen it unfold, but we're pre-Super Bowl here, so we have predictions. Halftime. I'm gonna pose a tough question to you.
Okay.
People are giving Maroon 5 and whomever, all the Roberta Flack or whoever's playing. I don't remember who's playing.
Wait, who is it who's
Big Boy
singing?
And Travis Scott.
No, yeah, but he's right. There's somebody singing the national anthem.
Gladys Knight. All right, Gladys Knight, and everyone's getting a ton of crap because they're playing Sun City.
Right.
You can look up that reference.
Yes, that's a very good reference.
Yeah, Sun City is a place in South Africa, right. And you're not going to play Sun City meant not going to support apartheid.
I said last week, you're crossing the ideological and intellectual picket line.
So you're kind of there. Like, I mean, you're kind of saying this is Sun City.
Yeah.
And the bands who, you know, were woke, you know, you two would have never played Sun City.
Correct.
Back in the day.
Bob Geldof would not have played
Bob
Sun
Geldof
City.
And the Boomtown Rats would not have played Sun City, but Maroon 5 may have played Sun City.
And I'm going to come back to what I referenced last week. There's a couple of things I find thoroughly obnoxious, and the one of them is if you're going to do it, own it. And to that extent, Gladys Knight has owned it, and Adam Levine has not.
Well, I want to know the difference between the two in the ownership, but I'm going to pose this hypothetical and difficult question to you. If Adam Levine is crossing the picket line, so to speak, or playing Sun City by doing the halftime event for the game— what about the black players that are participating in the game? Should they hold out? Should they have held out? Are they playing Sun City?
I literally...
You really want to disrupt this thing, play.
Right, and I said literally, and we get a lot of flack for literally around here, but there is something to be said for that if you have solidarity, that's something you can legitimately make an argument for.
Should they... Adam Levine is getting shit for doing this. Should black players be getting shit?
I think any player should be getting shit. I mean, Adam Levine is Adam Levine, but the...
any player.
Yeah, I think any player. I wouldn't limit it to black. I think that there hasn't been any or as much solidarity as one would expect out of non-black players. I mean, famously, the Miami Dolphins, famously Eric Reed at Carolina have stepped up. Michael has stepped up and some of the other players. But, you know, there's at a certain point, there is, if you truly believe in what it is that the cause is, then you've got to go. You can't just draw arbitrary lines. You're either all in or you're not. It's not, you know, partially pregnant. So that's a pretty. I don't think that's a difficult argument. I think that's a legitimate argument on your part.
Well, it's an extension of the same argument. It's basically sort of saying, well, if this guy's crossed the line by playing the halftime show, what about the people that are actually in the game? I mean, they play a more important role than we could have the game without the halftime show.
Could also take it, and I think there's been some controversy about this. Controversy, a.k.a. meaning chatter. If you are saying something about the halftime show, then why aren't you saying something also about starring in an ad for the halftime show? And I think that's legit. I think, look, if you say it's
starring
wrong
in an ad
that you know is going to be, you know, mind you, all
played
of the
during the Super Bowl.
During the Super Bowl, you know that's a big deal. To be in a Super Bowl ad. If you believe that it's not cool or intellectually honest for a performer to perform at halftime, and I think that it is crossing a line, then I think it should also be for a Super Bowl ad.
So if you're, I don't know, let's just say you're a big comedian or actress or whatever, and you're starring in a Cheetos commercial that's going to run during the Super Bowl, you should probably keep it zipped if you're giving any flack to Adam Levine or in company.
If it is one of the – and the reason I know that they know about this is they've already released, and I don't know if it was done purposefully or not, but a an ensemble or a various medleys, if you will, of Super Bowl ads. There are ads. There's a number of ads that run across the game. That's the inventory. The advertisers pay a gazillion dollars for it. And based on that, you know which ads, and I forget the number, are Super Bowl quote-unquote ads. They don't get played before. They will get played after. And everybody tries to outdo each other. It's kind of an American tradition. So, yes, do I think it would be inconsistent to star in one of those ads that you know is going to be played during the Super Bowl and give Adam Levine shit? Yes, I do. But you know,
I'm guessing. I have not taken a deep dive in this. But I'm guessing whoever is starring in those ads is keeping it zipped in terms of giving Adam Levine shit because they realize it's going to turn boomerang back on them. I would imagine.
That's either that or they just have adopted kind of our philosophy about the American public is that the attention span is about, you know, 72 hours and then you move on to the next thing to be outraged about.
Where's Kaepernick going to be? Do you know? Is he going to watch
the game?
He's
not going to be in the United States.
Really?
Yes. I do not think he will be in the United States.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, you might know this, but I'm guessing somebody – well, here's an interesting thing. A Super Bowl commercial with Kaepernick in it would be through the roof or insane or,
exactly.
Or the whatever. The internet would explode or whatever it is. There must have been some thought about that. Maybe there is a Super Bowl ad with Kaepernick in it. I really don't know. Would the NFL allow that? And if not, like they've said, like, look, we're not going to let a marijuana dispensary like advertised or cannabis or whatever. And you go, okay, but you have Budweiser. But they go, no, we got a rule and that's our rule and they can do it. They don't have any pre-existing rule about Kaepernick and advertising. Somebody must have thought of this. And then what would they do?
Well, it's interesting because when there is a hearing on this case, that very question may be part of the case. So I won't go there because I don't even want to be a first cousin of a violation of the protective order, but that certainly is, in your usual way, a very insightful way to look at this because clearly that would indicate that there is some kind of conspiracy, a.k.a. collusion or collusive activity.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place if you're Goodell and the NFL, which is, hey, Nike wants to run a Kaepernick ad during the Super Bowl, and you've taken plenty of Nike's money, famously, and run plenty of ads. So you are forced to essentially take this ad. And
exactly.
if you say no, again, you can't say it's for content or we don't endorse whatever.
I don't give Roger Goodell any quarter on this though, because I could say hypothetically that he's between a rock and a hard place, but he's not between a rock and a hard place. Once he comes out and he's asked the question at a press conference that says, what about Colin Kaepernick? And when he says, oh, there's no collusion, there's 32 teams who all came to this conclusion independently, and I call bullshit on that. That's just not true. He knows it's not true. That might have been scripted for him, but he knows that that is ridiculous. You know what else is ridiculous?
How comfortable.
Not going back east and wearing your Tommy Johns. Because, by the way, Valentine's is coming up. If your big Valentine's surprise is supermarket roses or drugstore chocolates, you know the kind I'm talking about, then rethink what a Valentine's gift can be with Tommy John. Redefining comfort for men. I'm not wearing my Tommy John shirt today. You are.
I'm wearing the underwear.
I'm wearing the underwear, exactly. And moisture-wicking underwear, feather light, luxuriously soft, moves with you, no pinching, bunching, or riding up. Looking for a Valentine's gift? Try their limited edition loungewear and underwear, matching his and hers sets. Last year, the limited edition sold out in less than, guess how long? 1 week.
Less than a week.
Yep. Don't wait. Best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Shop limited edition Valentine's Day gift sets and get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. Only at TommyJohn.com. TommyJohn.com.
I was laughing when I was listening to you talk Good Morning in America or whatever the hell was going on my sofa in the morning. And stuff. Anyway, I was watching. I was laughing. And the reason I was laughing because I like to think, like I tell people all the time, the greatest insult is not the one that says, you're a big douche bucket, nobody, you suck, you've never been funny, nobody ever likes you. I said the greatest insult is like when people go, I liked your other stuff, your first book was funny, I was a big fan, this was just not up to par. You know, that means something, right?
Exactly, you've lost a step.
And when you're up there and you're going, Mark Sanchez is in the league, you're not even saying you like Mark Sanchez, but being used as an example is the greatest insult of all time. It's the greatest insult of all time, and it always makes me laugh because I think about poor Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
And everyone, they get on, you know, they're doing the right wing radio and the guy gets on the phone and he calls in and he's like, Trump's an embarrassment. He's a pompous ass. He's not fit for the office. And then the guy who's hosting the show goes, you know who is a gentleman and you know who loved his family and you know who never had any extramarital affairs? Jimmy Carter. And guess who was the worst president ever? And I picture Jimmy Carter like driving, like nodding his head like, yeah, that's right. I never had any affairs. Well, I'm a good guy. I'm a good neighbor.
For you and me, when you see Jimmy Carter, if you do one of those free associations, they immediately think gas lines. I mean, that's at least right. I do. Gas lines. That's right. All I remember.
I just picture poor Mark Sanchez and poor Jimmy exactly. Carter sitting together going, what did we do?
And Sanchez was a hero in L.A. I mean, L.A. was just, unbelievable, but that's unfortunate. That's what, you know, New York will do that to you, though. It'll chew you up and spit you out.
I mean, let me ask you a question that you're uniquely qualified to answer about Mark Goodell. I really don't follow him closely enough to know, is he evil? Is he protecting his franchise? Is he worried about his job? Roger Goodell. Mark Sanchez, Mark Garriga, sorry. Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell, in your estimation, and so what I'm saying is like when somebody says, when a guy's wife finds glitter on him and on his sweater and goes, you were at a strip club last night. And the guy goes, no, I was at a kid's party and they pulled a popper and he's lying. I don't really blame him for lying. I don't think he's a bad person. He's trying to protect himself or his divorce or his family, or whatever it is. So with Goodell, I hear, oh, he's horrible. He's horrible. He's horrible. And I don't know. Like I have not taken a deep enough dive into his past or who he is or whatever. And I can't think he's horrible because he's protecting his franchise. But you tell me, like, as a human being.
I think that he cultivates the image of a leader above the fray. And to some degree, they like putting him out there because he kind of looks like – he's got the look – if you sent to central casting for what you'd want for the NFL, square jawed, kind of looks like an ex football player,
right?
Blonde hair, kind of, you know, the archetype of white America, pro football, mom and American pie. I will tell you, based on having done a deposition of him in real time, and the answers that were given, that image, I think, does not hold up. So I don't want to violate anything, but I will tell you there is more substance there than the image that has been cultivated, and I don't know that I would endorse the substance.
And
is that a vague response?
No, I understand you're in a position where you're just not obliged to.
No, I don't have fuck me money yet. You know, you and I discussed many months ago, the prospect of just burning $500,000 for the benefit of the Reasonable Doubt listener, we're not there yet.
Yeah, now
maybe
again,
when we do a premium show, we'll do a premium. Okay, I'm going to violate 10 different protective and court orders all at once, and would everybody please contribute $10 to help pay for the OSC rate contempt? I'll do the jail time on me.
Yeah, and once again, fuck me money is way above fuck you money. We have FU money. We don't have F me money yet.
We have fuck you money all the time. I have fuck you resources all the time. I do not have fuck me money.
Mm-hmm. So we should all strive for that.
Yes, fuck me money is the – when I grow up, I want to have fuck me money.
So for you, so you say that Cap will probably not be in the United States during the Super Bowl.
Right.
Intentionally?
I don't know. Look, I'm speaking now not as his lawyer but as somebody who observes – people who are in a situation where they've got a legal case, whether they're prosecuting it or they're defending it. And in this case, he's prosecuting a legal case against all odds, frankly. I mean, people never in a million years thought – I mean, I know people counseled me when I took the case. You're not going to get past summary judgment. You're never going to get anywhere, blah, blah, blah. How are you going to find this? They're too smart. You're up against too many resources. Blah, blah, blah. We're there where we're on the eve of having a hearing. We survived summary judgment. And frankly, I think we've got all the evidence we need to win. So having said that, knowing that there has been a movement that has kind of propelled you beyond, I mean, really kind of sanctified air. He's mentioned in the same breath with Martin Luther King. He's mentioned in the same breath as Muhammad Ali. He's mentioned in the same breath, rightfully so, of Carlos and Smith. And I could go through all the others. The 68 Mexico Olympics.
Right.
And there's, you know, I 10 days ago, I think was the what would have been the 100th birthday for Jackie Robinson. And
how about
Jackie
the poor
Robinson.
White guy who got second place in that race?
Right.
And that guy got jobbed.
He should have raised his hand in solidarity.
The guy, I think he's from Australia.
Was he?
Yeah.
But he could have raised his hand.
The guy, first off.
Who was it? We should know his name.
He's the world's fastest Australian. The guy, first off, he comes in second place, but there's the podium. The way the podiums work is there's a 4-inch drop between second and third, and the guy in third is tall.
Right.
So, like, when you see the picture, and also there's an ethnic math you're doing in your brain. You're like, oh, the two brothers, first place. Then the other brother got second place. Okay. He got third place. But the white guy got second place. And then he was – Peter Norman's his name.
Peter Norman. Wait, is Peter Norman still alive?
No. I think he literally died of, like, alcohol consumption or something. Like he – so now the guy
– had another friend like, last week who just died of alcohol consumption. Younger than me, your age.
The guy – Jesus Christ, I'm going to drink to that guy tonight. So the guy literally is, I guess he's like in the tunnel. They're going to walk out and then like, hey, put this little badge on, you know, put this thing on your lapel. And he's standing between the two guys. And he's like, yeah, okay, I'm down with the cause. He puts the thing on his lapel. He goes out there. They raise their hand. He doesn't raise his hand. He gets second. He goes back to Australia. He's a pariah.
Yeah.
He's a pariah because he's just there.
Yeah.
He's literally sitting in the back of the getaway car that was stolen, essentially, but he's there at the scene of the crime.
You know what they call that? Accomplice liability. I mean, and boy, there's a lot of guys in prison on accomplice liability.
So he's like, why am I not being hailed as the star that I am? And again, you look at the famous picture. He happens to be a short guy. And he's standing there in his green tracksuit, but he put a little button on his lapel, and that's it. And Australia, not as progressive
woke?
As we'd like to
not
think.
As woke?
Not as woke as we'd like to like to think. And he went back and he was, I don't know, he had like a, his names were removed from the records and stuff and all that kind of stuff. And he basically, I think, just crawled inside a whiskey bottle and called it a life. He died at a fairly early age and blah, blah, blah. So
that's a very interesting. How do you know 64. So much about this?
Died at 64.
Correct.
I guess fairly early age until I exceed that age.
Right. He drank, well, for a world-class sprinter, you know, to die in his early 60s is fairly young.
I don't know. There's something about running.
Jim Fix.
Jim Fix, exactly. And runners, I've noticed, are unlike tennis players. I don't know. Guys who do racket sports tend to have longevity.
You're right.
Runners do not have longevity.
I know. And every time, you're right, especially women. You ever see the look on their face when their 55-year-old woman is jogging through it? She looks like she looks anguished. The face on those guys.
There's something about it. And having been a runner for 20 years and now paying the price on my joints, I think there's something to be said. I think it's interesting. Sometime we should have Vinny on here to get his. I think it has something to do that racket sports – are bursts of energy. Uh-huh. So you're running to the net quick, then you stop. It's kind of like a consolidated interval training. And I think that's healthier. And that sustained kind of whatever just takes a toll on your immune system.
Well, look at any slave, Egyptian slave, when they're like, in those movies where they're like toiling and they're packing the mud and they're putting the straw in and they're nobody's got a build on them.
Yeah.
They're all just beleaguered, and that's basically just this repetitive, super long, drawn out. Yeah, you're much better. And that's why, if you take a look, and maybe it's a chicken or the egg thing, you take a look at the guys who run the 100-yard or 100-meter sprints, they are brick shit houses.
Exactly.
And those guys have builds on them. They look like Herschel Walker. And then you see the guys who do the 3,000-meter, the 10-million-meter, whatever. Those guys look put away
it's
wet.
Exactly right. The guys who are Herschel Walker is a great example. What's his name? Usain Bolt is a great example.
How about Christian Okoye?
Yeah,
He was a track guy.
Right. Remember him? Azusa, right?
Pacific.
Yeah.
That's right.
I remember.
Nigerian Nightmare.
And there's something about those bursts. I think also, if you take a look at these various sports, basketball players, because it's also got has that same element of intervals, meaning stop and start, they tend to have a longevity. I was looking at Bill Russell and Elgin Baylor, who was a client and who I know well, the same thing. I mean, there's a longevity that is belied in other tall people
I agree. And never was it in sharper focus than when I had one of my most uncomfortable conversations ever with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the radio. I was like, so you ever thought about, the fact that I don't know if it's a syndrome, but you don't see guys over 6'9 in their 80s. You just don't, And he's like, what? And I'm like, surely you've contemplated this thought that you don't see a lot of real tall, real old guys. He's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I can't be the first guy to bring this up to you, right? And he's like, yes, you are.
Wow.
Now, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
This is uncomfortable.
I don't get out of this one.
It's the worst interview ever.
Oh, my God. And was it before he had his heart condition or heart problem?
It must have been the terrestrial radio show. It was rather like 08
or
something. Yeah,
so it was before.
It was before,
I think.
But Bill Russell's still trucking along.
I saw a picture of him playing golf the other day, and Elgin is still doing well. And so, but those are exceptions. I mean, it's a very difficult situation, I think, on the body. I mean, clearly, NFL football, people talk often about the CTE, But NFL football, before there was a CTE, I remember growing up, the fact that they would talk about would be the median life expectancy, which was dramatically lower than what the average male expectancy was.
I'll tease this to you. So as we spoke about, obviously the Super Bowl has passed. A couple things. Do you expect to go to trial with the Kaepernick case?
Yes. I don't think there's hold on. I'll explain it. That was a tease and I jumped the gun.
And then the tease will be when. Okay. That'll be it. And I'll tell you about True Car. Every car has a story. What is the story of your car? How can you put a price on those stories? Well, True Car can put a price on it. You find out what your car's worth. When it's time to sell or trade it in, just go to True Car, enter your plate number, and your car's details pop up. Then answer a few easy questions. Once you're finished, you get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local dealer, a certified True Car dealer, and you can cash it in or walk away with a check, or you can trade your car in and drive out of there with a new car. Or a used car, you'll pull in, they'll walk around the car, you ask some questions, they'll give you some answers, they'll figure everything out, and it's soup to nuts, one-stop shopping. So when you want to sell your car, or you want to trade it in on a new car, or you want to trade in on a used car, you always go with True Car. True cash offer not available in all areas. So going to trial and a rough date.
Going to trial, and I think it's a given. I have very little belief that anything will happen before that, and I would say less than 45 days.
Wow. Yeah. How long might a trial like this last on average?
I would think you could do a trial like this in about a week would be my guess.
And I would assume that the NFL would prefer this go away and prefer it not go to trial and prefer to cut a check and sign some gag orders and move on with their lives. But the amount shall be astronomical, and there's a certain admittance of guilt when one cuts a check, although that goes away fairly quickly. That, I think, gets kind of cycled
right.
out
it
pretty,
does.
Pretty
it,
quickly.
It goes back to our the public has a very short attention span. I think, and all of this is hypothetical, I'm going to preface it with, in any situation where you have an institution, they make certain calculations, and it's a cost-benefit analysis. Is it worth it? Can we survive it? Do we think we've done something that will survive it? Taken other methods? What's the lesser of two evils? Is taking the hit from an arbitrator, for instance, if you're a corporation that's going to go to an arbitration, is that better or worse than taking the hit from the president who may be picking on us? So whether it's Mark Zuckerberg or whether it's Jeff Bezos or whether it's the NFL, all those things are calculations that they make.
Are you able to answer this question, which is, have they made any kind of offer?
I'm unable to answer that question.
Oh, my God. Because you'd have to back up a Brinks truck, and it would have to hit another Brinks truck that was backing out of the driveway that just dropped off some bouillon in order for that to be acceptable.
Since we're nominally a legal show, I'll talk about for a second the mediation or arbitration privilege. If you were to discuss, and this happens in virtually every case, you have discussions about settlement. On the letterhead of a letter, or if you go to a mediation, there is always a document that you sign. And the document that you sign acknowledges that you're aware. And in fact, California just passed the law, so it's only 5 weeks old. Under California law, you must get a client acknowledgement that they understand that there's this thing called the mediation privilege. mediation privilege means you can't talk about going to the mediation. You can't talk about what happened during the mediation, and nothing that was said in the mediation is admissible. The reason for that, the public policy for that, is we want a free exchange of ideas that is not encumbered by the fact that something I say is going to be used against me in a public forum afterwards.
You know what drove me insane when I was being sued by Personal Audio, I think it was a company.
And, how long ago?
Oh, God. Must have been 4 years, 5 years, something like that. And I said, well, these are patent trolls, and I'm not gonna settle.
Oh, I remember.
And
You called Personal Audio because that was the name of the company?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't even know.
I remember patent trolls. So
I don't know if they even exist anymore, but it was all part of this big shakedown that could, quite frankly, it's not the homeless population is not really the fault of the homeless. It's the fault of the government and the city officials and the people that don't do anything about it. You know
right.
what I mean?
Unleash the mentally ill onto the
right.
streets and expect, hey, why don't they have a job?
Patent trolls are literally just doing what they're doing because the government allows them to do what they do.
It's the old expression, find a niche and fill it.
Congress's fault for not putting an end to this.
Right.
You know, it's not them. They're lawyers. They have zero of them. They have no scruples. They're lawyers. They're the worst people in the world. They're lawyers. They hate their own children and kick their mother if they thought a nickel would come out of her vagina. They're lawyers, Mark. Do you understand me?
I got you. And it's a corrupt system because they're also the legislators.
Right. So it's not their fault. It's the system. Of course, they shouldn't have a system where these people get to go unimpeded and just take money from honest taxpayers. So I made and you can see if they're still around, Gary. I don't know if they're even around anymore. But either way, the Congress and whoever sort of caught up to this. And, of course, they hadn't caught up to it when I was being sued. And it was costing hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal fees. And we tried to get a change of venue from Texas, where we're not, to here, where we are. But, of course, the judge sided with them, who lives in Texas.
Shocking.
And goes to the same golf club that they go to. And so that's how the system works. Anyway, I swore I would never settle, and we would fight the good fight. And eventually, they dropped the case. And they dropped the case because the sunlight is something that's not good for them. And they were getting a lot of sunlight with me because I was railing about it constantly into
a
microphone. And that's not something that they made a big miscalculation, which is go after Sony and Viacom or whoever. Don't go after the guy with the microphone because he's going to yell about it.
So, H.L. Mencken said it's hard to pick a fight with those who own barrels of ink.
Thank you. Sorry.
Right. It looks like maybe they are still around, but a large portion of at least the patents in our case were rejected. Their petition to the Supreme Court was rejected in the middle of last year. So they're largely without assets.
So good. So the news went down. So they said, please stop yapping about us. I said, all right, well, stop suing us.
Right.
And then we'll stop yapping about you. It's always great when somebody sues you and then goes, why are you talking shit?
Well, it's so funny you say this. Teddy and I, my daughter, who's a practicing lawyer in New York, did a presentation to a trial conference in January in which we talked about the kind of perversion of gag orders. And originally, gag orders, starting with Shepard versus Maxwell, which was the case that later became the one-armed man and the fugitive, that was F.
Wow.
Lee Bailey's case back in the 50s that made its way up to the Supreme Court, and a young F. Lee Bailey got a reversal of the murder conviction because of pretrial publicity. So originally, gag orders were to protect somebody from pretrial publicity. Slowly that evolved over the years, and it became prosecutors coming out and using the gag order to shut down defendants. And this started back during Kobe and Peterson and Michael Jackson. Now gag orders have been taken by the large corporate America to shut up the guy who can fight back like you or me, and they use the gag orders against us because the last thing they want is transparency or the truth to come out. You know, first example, NFL, Kaepernick versus the NFL. You know, they threaten me every time I talk about it or there's any testimony about it.
So I spoke my mind. They got tired of me speaking my mind. So then they said, well, you stop talking. And I said, you drop the case and I'll stop talking. And they dropped the case.
Right.
Then they wrote articles, and the articles say, headline, Corolla settles with right. personal audio. And I'm like, now look, I get it. Everyone hates me. But could you possibly call it settling if there was zero money exchanged? And what are you implying when you say settles? And what kind of journalism are you actually doing when you use the word settle?
Right. How about the fact that they walked away, dismissed, and waved the white flag, which is actually what happened. Which
right.
is why I will not – I almost always – in cases like that where I'm defending somebody, will not sign on to a non-disclosure, especially when there has already been media that's generated about it.
Let me ask you a very roundabout Kaepernick NFL trial lawyer question. And if this thought has run through your head, and if it hasn't, I'll run it through your head. And you tell me why it's neither here nor there. Your job is to prove that there was knowledge and collusion and an attempt to keep Kaepernick out of the NFL, not simply on the merits of his athletic ability, but that this taking a knee and this factored in. They're going to attempt to show that there was no discussions, collusions, and what have you. This was simply on a merit of his ability. Are they – now, then there's the cause. Why is Kaepernick taking a knee? What caused him to take a knee? Statistically, they have the argument in that case. There's not an epidemic of white cops shooting black people. There's an epidemic of black people shooting black people, which is something I wish Black Lives Matter would focus on a little more. Are they going to attack the actual reason for the knee? And what if they could prove statistically that the knee was unnecessary?
No, I think – and I can answer this without involving the protective order at all, because they've gone out of their way to embrace social justice initiatives, as Eric Reed would say, as a way of quelling the discontent – and having the players' coalition and funding money, at least illusorily or in an illusory fashion.
So they've agreed
they've
this
already,
is an issue, yeah. and we've signed off on the issue.
Yeah, and you've seen Goodell go down to New Orleans, and you've seen they do kind of photo ops and things like that. So, no, they aren't fighting the battle at all on that territory. And that is, I think, something that anybody – who can Google can see.
All right.
Okay.
I don't know. It'll be slow because it's after the Super Bowl, and who knows what the news cycle is.
Right. You never know. In this news cycle, are you kidding?
You never know, but this thing could be really big stuff. And
and if it is, I'm driving over to the Foxwoods Casino or maybe over to the Wilbur Theater.
And one last one, just a thought. It's sort of in the same vein. It just popped into my head. I'd like to get just your brief take on this. African-American gay actor who was assaulted with the
right.
noose and the bleach and everything. It's early. By the time you hear this, people will know more about it. Some people are saying this thing was Morton Downey Jr. Others are saying it's not. there's some, like, well, we have surveillance footage, but we don't have the surveillance footage of the assault. Any insights, any thoughts?
Jesse
Smollett, sorry.
Yeah, by the time this is played, my suspicion is we're going to know a whole lot more.
Well, that's
a whole lot more.
A whole lot.
Yeah, a whole lot more.
What does that mean? You don't have a gag order.
I think I'll prognosticate it. There's something about this that doesn't feel right, and I haven't put my finger on it yet, but I had a weird feeling about this when I heard about it first, and I just don't get it, and I am hopeful that we get more information. I don't want to prejudge it. I really don't. But I will say I had something intuitively, instinctually, that bothered me about this.
Well,
And I don't know if it's because I've got two minds. There is a certain part of me that wants to say, I cannot believe that we live in America where this would happen. And so am I overreacting to that it just can't be true because I'm a Pollyannish, that I'm just hoping it isn't. And so that's what's my instinct. Or is there something about the story that just doesn't kind of fit into my logic?
The only thing that I have is a sort of my take is when the cop pulls you over and says, take the breathalyzer, and my client said no, but he wasn't drunk. I'm always a little like, well, then why not just blow into it and get on your way or take the lie detector? I always have a little bit of that. And there's a thing in this case where he said, I was on the phone with my manager when the assault took place, and he can vouch for what was being said or whatever. And they said, okay, give us your phone. And he said, no. So now there may be much more to it, but normally when there's an opportunity and you go, no, I'm not taking the breathalyzer, but I wasn't drunk, I sort of go, well, take the breathalyzer and prove you're not drunk and be on your way, Gary.
That one's good. I had not heard that particular one. The one that I heard that raised my hackles just a touch is that apparently when the responding officers showed up, one of the first things he asked was that they turn off their body cams. That's weird. I don't know. I don't know what it means, but it was one of those things that made me just go, well, why? What is that?
I don't pay you enough to afford hackles, by the way.
Yeah. Shekels for the hackles.
Yeah,
right?
Shekels for hackles. All right. Let me tell you, at least Tommy John. Oh, boy. We love. I'm wearing my Tommy Johns right now.
Fantastic.
Every single morning.
They're the best.
Valentine's Day is upon us, and you need to get yourself some Tommy John. Get your man, get your woman some Tommy John. Still looking for that gift. They have a limited edition loungewear and underwear as well, including matching his and her sets. Last year, the limited edition sold out in less than a week, so let's not wait. I challenge anyone who tries Tommy John to send me a tweet and tell me that they're unsatisfied with their purchase, because it's impossible. And I've put that out there for years now, and I've not heard one hackling word about it. It is the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guarantee. No adjustment needed, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Shop limited edition Valentine's Day gift sets and get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. Only at TommyJohn.com, TommyJohn.com.
So you can see Not Taco Bell material, my first one-hour stand-up special. And if you'd like, you get all the details at AdamCarolla.com/events. And I can see you tonight at the Wilbur Theater in Boston, and we'll hang out afterward and sign, take some pictures and all that. Mark, what do you got?
I've got my favorite restaurant, 10E downtown, Engine Company 28 downtown and at the airport. Prova Pizzeria, Grand Central Terminal, and Times Square, V Palm Springs Hotel, Casa Tropicana in San Clemente. So you got the beach, you got the desert, and you're all set.
So, until next time, Sam Kroll for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.